And this is The Science Show on ABC Radio National and online. And here's a woman who stuck to her research and scored a major Academy Award. Kirsten Beckendorf has won the Dorothy Hill Prize for her work on shellfish.
So Dorothy Hill was a very inspiring earth scientist who was interested primarily in geology, but also an academic who did play a very active role in student life and encouraging students to study marine sciences.
Well, congratulations. What do you think you got the award for?
So I believe that I was awarded the Dorothy Hill Award for my research on mollusks. All of the environmental research that I do, looking at mollusks as environmental indicators and also mollusks as resources for humans.
What's that huge one over there, the size of a football?
So I have a rather large sculpture of a Dicotheus orbiter, which is a predatory marine snail that I'm particularly interested in for its anti-cancer properties.
It's predatory, you say. What does it catch?
So it feeds primarily on other mollusks. It loves abalone. It actually drills through the shells of other mollusks, injects a muscle relaxant, and when the muscles relax, it then starts to consume the tissue.
With a name like that and what it does, it sounds like a sort of invader from outer space.
Well, I suppose particularly when you look at its little larvae, because I've shown high school students larvae through the microscope and they think that they look like little aliens.
That's what I mean. It's incredible. So it's not normally that size. What size is it when you're actually looking at a real one?
It is actually a relatively large mollusk. It gets probably up to around 20 or so centimetres when it's fully grown and mature. They can actually live for 20 years or more, which is quite old for a mollusk as well.
So it drills through, relaxes the muscle, the shell of its prey opens and it just gobbles it up.
That's absolutely correct.
Now, how have you got on extracting this active agent?
I've been looking at a specialised organ within the mollusk which is producing Tyrian purple and a range of other interesting chemicals. And it also produces these chemicals in its egg masses, and I think it's actually producing them to protect the egg masses. But in the biosynthetic organ, it may actually be contributing those compounds into its blood so that it's part of their immune system.
Biochemically versatile, aren't they? Quite amazing.
They're fascinating chemists, there's no doubt about that.
Fascinating chemists. What stage have you got? Clinical trials or anything like that?
We've tested the extracts of this snail against a wide range of different cancer cell lines, including lymphoma cell lines, as well as some breast cancers and colon cancers, and a whole range of also female reproductive cancers. The reason for the reproductive cancers is that they do actually derive a homeopathic remedy from these snails that is actually used commercially. Throughout India, actually, it is using it quite actively, as well as in Germany. And it's used for women's problems, a whole range of women's problems, including cancer. So we have tested the extracts for their efficacy against cancer cell lines, as well as their safety against normal human cells, including immune blood cells. And we've also tested them in the first preclinical model, which is a rodent model for colorectal cancer.
So there was a hint in the first place that these substances might be useful in treating people, because I've often wondered, if you look at all the different mollusks and all the different sea animals, how do you know which ones are going to be convenient for which diseases and where to start?
It's actually an interesting question, because there is a huge diversity out there, and where do you actually start looking? In this particular case, I actually found the anti-cancer properties before I knew of the homeopathic remedy, but the homeopathic remedy has actually taken the research in a bit of a direction of looking at the effects on hormones and female reproductive cancers. But I have recently written a review of molluscan medicines, and it's quite amazing how many different mollusks are used in different countries. South Africa in particular has a very large number of medicines derived from mollusks, and also India and China in particular are really using a number of mollusks for medicines.
How many of them work?
I think in most cases, these traditional medicines are not retained unless they do actually work in some form or another. A lot of the South African ones, however, could actually be more spiritual. But when they're used for very specific conditions like urinary problems, then you actually think that there might be something in it because their application is so specific. And if we actually look at Chinese medicines, things like abalone, for example, with antiviral properties, antibacterial properties, and usually when you actually start looking at the Chinese medicines in detail, you do find a biologically active product.
More than the placebo effect.
Well, I think when it comes to homeopathic remedies, of which there are also several on mollusks, there you're probably looking at a placebo effect. So with the homeopathic remedy, I did actually do a chemical analysis on it and found virtually nothing in it. If you concentrate it enormously, you can actually detect small amounts of some of these compounds. But this particular homeopathic remedy from the Murex snails is an unusual one because they use it in the tincture form as well as in a dilute form. But yeah, in most cases, the products are so dilute that there's nothing left in them, and you do have to question, and very, very little science to substantiate homeopathic remedies, I think.
Indeed. The Murex and the cancer trial, when will you get some preliminary results?
Well, we do already have some preliminary results from the colon cancer trial. This is a prevention model, and we've been able to show that it prevents the early stage tumour formation. And we've also run it through a combination type therapy where we were trying it with another anti-cancer agent. In that instance, it actually caused some inflammation of the gut, so it's probably something that's better to use on its own. The next stage is actually to look at a longer term model and to look at more purified compounds from the snail rather than crude extracts, and also to move on to treatment models. So we're interested in both prevention and treatment. And at the moment, it's looking promising for prevention, but we haven't tested it for treatment yet.
I must say, next to your sculpture, you've got any number of fantastic shells. Must be about 20, 30 different sorts. Do you study them all?
I do actually look at molluscan biodiversity more from a basic bioresource assessment, what is actually out there in the environment. I'm going to be hopefully looking at murecids in more detail, and even just within that particular one family of mollusk, we're talking about hundreds of species across the globe, right through from Antarctica up into tropical waters. So, of course, I could never potentially hope to assess all of the mollusks that are out there. I am concentrating in particular on that family, but others that have, you know, a lead for interesting medicinal reasons, or because in terms of the taxonomy of mollusks, if nobody's ever looked at them chemically before, they could have something quite novel that we haven't seen before.
What about as environmental indicators?
In terms of, I guess, things like climate change, they're very interesting indicators from the perspective that they usually have a limited temperature range which their immune system works in, and they also are susceptible to low pH, so acidification of the ocean being a very big problem for the future. So they need calcium to build their shells, and in low pH conditions you actually don't get the proper shell formation.
It's more acid.
Yes, when you get acidic waters, and that's certainly what is happening with the increasing carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. So I think they're interesting indicators of global change. They're also interesting indicators of the health of the environment, because we are actually currently seeing mass mortalities in mollusks right around the world. And a lot of this is detected in the fisheries and aquaculture type industries. But even, you know, I think species that aren't necessarily under aquaculture or fisheries, we are seeing, you know, massive numbers of species wash up on the beach dead, and usually this is because of a disease problem. So new viruses like the herpes virus are breaking out, wiping out enormous numbers of mollusks, and I think that's an indication of a health problem in the environment, that we've upset that balance between optimal health for the mollusk and the pathogen, which actually can grow better in warmer waters or in more nutrient-rich waters, or conditions that are stressful for the mollusk are often good for the pathogens, and we're just seeing this upset balance of pathogen-host relationship.
The prize-winning work of Kirsten Beckendorf, who lectures at Southern Cross University in Lismore, New South Wales, winner of the Dorothy Hill Award from the Academy of Science. And I trust she gave you an idea of the gigantic number of species we have in our waters.